We don't have control over wins and losses. We only have control over the controllables, which are getting ourselves fit, taking care of the things that we need to take care of in the classroom, taking care of our bodies off the field. And at the end of the day, hopefully that does translate to games.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Jen Mavis. Jen is an assistant coach and director of camps and clinics for UMBC Women's Soccer. She's previously held positions at William & Mary and University of Oklahoma. Among the topics Jen will discuss are building trust between coaches and athletes, adapting in-season training, and preventing soft tissue injuries. So let's get started. Here's your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this seventh edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast. Jen, great to have you here. We appreciate you coming to take the time and talk to us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's hop right into it. And can you just dive in a bit about your background and kind of how you ended up at a UMBC last year?
Yeah, so my coaching career started as a youth soccer coach, actually. So I started working with kids 8 to 10 years old, started my own soccer club with some of my fellow teammates at Nevada after we graduated. And from there, went on to the University of Oklahoma to be a director of operations, so a GA there. Went from there to the College of William & Mary. It's actually a university, but we like to call it the College of Knowledge there. So I spent 3 seasons at William & Mary, and I am now on my second season here at UMBC.
Okay, cool. So yeah, as you mentioned, you've been involved with several different college programs in your career. Are there any fundamentals that you've consistently tried to bring that have you seen success on the field with?
Players have to buy in first before you can even start talking about anything else. So fundamentally, you have to have a group of kids who are bought into what it is that you're trying to do as a coach. Those teams that are at the top that are most successful, I'll tell you what, they've got kids who are fit and physical and strong, doing all the right things in the weight room. They come in fit into preseason, and you know, it makes things easier for coaches to teach the tactics and how we're going to play if those kids come in fit. So besides some of the other stuff that's off the field, the cultural development pieces, I think those programs where the athletes are coming in healthy and strong coming into preseason, that helps make their programs more successful going in towards the end of the fall season.
Okay, and you mentioned the weight room there. I just wanted to touch on that. Have you seen a big difference as far as, I'm assuming not even that many years ago, you'd see a lot of players who had come in who actually hadn't lifted before. Has that changed? Are you still dealing with a lot of those first-time weightlifters?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I, having been from the West Coast originally and being a fair bit older than the athletes we have here, I was in the weight room when I was in high school. There are kids in this region that coming into their freshman year of college will potentially never have been in a formal strength and conditioning setting. So we still see that. There are some kids that come in with a little bit of experience, but we're blessed here to have such a good strength and conditioning group that they'll put the kids through some movement screens first and assess where they are and make sure they go through the fundamentals of a strength program before they throw them into the mix.
Okay. Well, that's a huge relief, I bet, to know that they're doing individualized stuff as opposed to just throwing everybody into a single program.
Yeah, I mean, some of the programs get adjusted and adapted. Some kids have different injuries and all that. The guys downstairs and the girls, our strength coaches, Caitlin Kite, she does a great job of doing what needs to be done for our athletes.
Definitely. And what are some of the main, let's say, coaching philosophies that you've tried to bring with you wherever you've gone?
I mean, you got to get to know your players, right? They have to know who you are. You don't just have to know who they are. You have to be genuine to yourself as a coach, like presenting yourself. Don't be somebody you're not. But ultimately, from like a coaching training standpoint, we like to do things as efficient as possible. Is what we're doing on the field going to translate to the game, right? Does everything make sense? And can we get ourselves fit? Can we teach within the flow of the game and the flow of our practices? Can we get that stuff done in the time allotted instead of keeping our kids out there all day? I'm really big on being efficient and making sure that what we're doing, does it make sense? Is it related to the game? And is it helping us go where we need to go instead of just, you know, I found this cool YouTube video, I'm going to try this exercise today, but does it really translate? So...
Awesome. And yeah, I think I love what you said. It sounds like, I didn't really think of it that way, that relationship actually really needs to be a two-way street, because I just think about, you know, the coaches have got to learn who the players are, but that really makes sense to me that they also have to know who you are.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that you get buy-in, right? I mean, you can try to do it two ways. You can tell the kids exactly what you want from them, which they have to know what you want from them. But I've found that if you ask the kids what it is that they want and how they want to do it, they'll actually say what it is you were going to say anyways. So you're going to get buy-in from them and you're going to hear more from them. You're going to know them and they're also going to know you. They have to know you in order for them to trust you also.
Okay. And kind of on that same topic, I wanted to go in a little bit deeper that for me, for example, my own experience is coaching American football over here for 10 years. I learned a ton from some amazing coaches about how to teach and get through to players. At the same time, I've actually noticed that a lot of the lessons that have stuck with me the best are actually from watching what didn't work and how not to actually treat the athletes. So to keep this safe without naming names, have you had any similar experiences?
Yeah, I think, you know, the benefits of being an assistant coach is you do get a chance to really observe and see other coaches. And yeah, I would agree. Like, you do learn more from watching things that didn't work. But I would also add, too, that I think I've learned a lot from just observing the athletes as well, right? So you can see coaches' behaviors and all those things that you don't think will work or won't work. But also just talking to the kids, too. I've learned a lot from just observing our players as well, because they're resilient, too. There's different ways to coach, right? Some coaches will grind on kids and want to be heavy yellers. And some kids want that. And some kids don't want that, you know, so.
Kind of seems like everything always goes back to those relationships, right? And just knowing your players, you know, in both directions.
Yeah, they're people. They're not just robots and machines. And when you know what kind of makes them tick and you treat them like people, you'll learn more from them. You'll get more out of them, certainly. And it just makes the experience that much better.
Yeah. And speaking of the college game, kind of how has it changed since you were a player as opposed to a coach now, as far as, you know, differences in training or tech or the resources that you've seen?
Besides the fact that when I was playing, the NCAA limited our meals to bagels, nuts, and fruits, and cream cheese was considered an extra benefit. I don't know if you had those same restrictions or not.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, now the kids don't have those same restrictions, but it's true. And soccer is such a heavily researched sport that I think now we know a lot about exercise science as it relates to soccer. So training sessions have changed. They have become more efficient. We talk more in coaching education about, you know, how are you going to get your kids fit with and without a soccer ball, but in like through small set of games and that type of stuff. Obviously, technology has just blown up. You can find a wearable just about anywhere. And I started playing college soccer right before the explosion of women's soccer in this country, which was about 1999. A lot of college programs are just spurting up about that time. So funding and resources have gotten a lot better. I mean, you still have the haves and the have-nots at certain institutions, right? But overall, I think the experience and the growth has been fantastic for women's soccer, men's and women's soccer, I'm sure.
So it's safe to say that the team at UMBC is doing a little bit better than peanuts and bagels right now.
100%. These kids.
Okay, that's good to
hear.
These
kids have enough to eat.
Okay, good. Just wanted to confirm that before we moved on. Yeah, so with the NCAA, so one of the most common digs I get from the international community is the substitution rule. Should the NCAA change the rule to kind of better replicate the international play? Because obviously the amount of substitutions is a lot. There's a lot more substitutions allowed with the NCAA rules.
Yeah, I think we have to ask ourselves what the purpose of the NCAA is for. I mean, I was part of U.S. soccer coaching education and, you know, part of some of those youth program changes and substitution rule changes at the youth side. Ultimately, if you change the substitution rules and you don't allow as many subs and we go internationally, you're going to have less kids with game realistic experience. And I think that that's something that we as college coaches talk about often with our own players, like especially goalkeepers. You know, we want them to be in more match realistic situations and scenarios. You can only get so many scrimmages, inter-squad games, right? We need them in a real situation. And if you limit the number of substitutions, then you're going to limit your ability to put kids in realistic situations. You know, at the end of the day, there's a reason why we have youth national teams. And those youth national team players get pulled into that. They're training and learning for that. The NCAA still is. We've got players that are growing and developing. I mean, Rose Lavelle is a player you can talk about. I believe I heard she didn't have the youth national team experience and she just blew up at the last Women's World Cup, you know? So I think as far as the NCAA is concerned, because I know it gets tons of digs, the men's side has been pushing for a 10-year calendar, which I would absolutely love. But as far as substitutions go, I mean, you limit the number of people who have the opportunity to step on the pitch. And while that will help develop those players who are playing 90 minutes for you, it's not going to help the rest of your roster develop and grow. And you never know who's going to be a late bloomer for you.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same opinion there. I think one of the main reasons is, you know, rosters vary that I've worked with from 23 up to 32 athletes. And you're going to have a lot of extremely unhappy athletes if you change that substitution rule that you're only working with, you know, that 13 to maybe on the high end 15 amount of players that are actually going to get playing time.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed that one on the head right there. Like, how would you keep kids bought in? You wouldn't carry a roster of 30 at the end of the day if you had a limited number of substitutions, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, let's go ahead. We're going to hit this quick answers, quick questions. So first one, favorite athlete growing up?
Christine Lilly.
Guilty music pleasure?
You know, I listen to a lot of music, so I'm going to go with something people probably wouldn't guess for me. When I'm working out and getting ready for game day, I'm listening to hard music, like Metallica, Pantera, Disturbed, that sort of stuff. That's what I go for.
Awesome. I'm with you there. Best game you've been involved in as a player or coach?
Best game I've been involved in as a coach, I'd have to say 2015, William & Mary, first round NCAA tournament, beating UCF in PKs.
Nice. Okay, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Dogs, awesome. We're on the same boat there. Defense or offense?
I'm a goalkeeper, so I got to go with defense.
All right. Biggest fear?
Spiders.
Okay. Favorite TV show?
I don't have a lot of TV. I don't watch TV. So if I do watch TV, I'm watching Naked and Afraid on the Discovery Channel.
Okay. You can recruit one professional soccer player to UMBC. Who's that going to be?
Julie Johnson.
All right. And bicycle kick or halfway line goal?
I'm going with a bike.
And who do you most want to beat this season?
I want us to be better than we were the day before. That's who I want us to beat. We're going to beat ourselves the day before. We're just going to be better every day.
All right. Let the scoreboard take care of itself, right?
That's right.
There we go. All right. Let's flip over a bit to First Beat and some of the monitoring related stuff. So I know you've been with First Beat. Is this going to be the fourth season? Do we have two or three at William & Mary? Now we're going on the second season here.
That's correct. Yep. Four seasons together.
Okay. Just talk a little bit about kind of how and when you use the technology.
So we use the technology for literally everything. We have First Beat on when we're working out on the field. We have it when we're cooling down, warming up. We also use First Beat in the weight room. We used First Beat last spring when we were doing our yoga sessions a couple of times. Then we decided we probably don't need to do that because most of the kids are sleeping in there. But we are using First Beat anytime a student athlete is with us and we are moving.
I'm with your players on the yoga. I love yoga and it's because I literally fall asleep. So I'm big on the yoga scene. So quick recovery test. I know that's something that you've done pretty religiously over the last year or so. Walk me through how you apply that with the team.
Yeah, so before every single training session, it's typically right after our athletes have finished doing whatever they needed to do in the training room if they needed to get taped up. But we start every practice with a team meeting. So the kids will come into the team room. They'll sit for a little bit, just catch their breath, whatever it is that they're doing. Usually they're not doing too many things that are strenuous, but we just give them a little bit of time to just sit and gather their thoughts. And then we have them do the quick recovery test in that space. They like to call it their fun 3-minute nap time. So 1-minute nap time. They take their quick recovery test. We put the last season, we put the results up on the TV once they were done so they could look at it. They obviously have access to it through their profiles, but that's sort of where we start with our QRTs. We also look at those QRTs right before we go out to training and we're like, all right, well, some of our kids look like they might not be quite ready yet. It's not that we necessarily change anything, it's just something to keep an eye on. Maybe we'll keep an eye on that kid. She looks a little tired or everybody's fresh. Let's go. Great job.
Okay, so you focus on the trends just to see what, you know, if you maybe need to pull back a bit or even if you could actually push a little bit harder.
Yeah, absolutely. Last fall, we started to pick up a QRT trend right before our pre-training session. It always corresponded with a men's soccer game, a night game. I had to start asking the kids questions now. Why are we having this dip that's happening? It's 2 weeks in a row now. We're having the same dip at this portion of the week. What were we doing last night? Well, we were staying out at the men's game the whole entire night. Well, if we're practicing early in the morning and the men's team goes into overtime, you're talking about being out at the field until just after 9 o'clock. So you're not getting your rest and your recovery. So it gave us an opportunity as well, not just look at trends and how are we going to apply that to training, but also how are we talking to our student athletes about what they're doing to help themselves recover? What are your off-field behaviors like? How are you resting, hydrating, and eating? All of those things. It actually opened up a really good conversation with us and our athletes.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I'm glad that's a huge point that I think a lot of this data brings is that people get nervous. Oh, they're recording our data, you know, they're monitoring us, how they're going to use that. But actually, the biggest thing is just to open up a conversation of, okay, well, why is this happening? How are you feeling? What's going on?
I think the kids at UMBC, when we first got here, we brought First Beat on, that exactly what you said, they were nervous. You're monitoring anything. You're going to make us work hard. You're going to make us run. Like they didn't have trust yet because when we first got here, we brought First Beat in. But when I was at William & Mary, we already had a relationship in. And so we could talk about, we were getting into sort of biofeedback stuff with different wearables. And actually, just before you came onto campus there, I don't know if you remember this, but we had a couple of kids who were running. We were doing some fitness stuff and they were using a wearable watch that records your your heart rate through the sensor. And, you know, we're just talking about breathing and recovery and those sort of things. And then you guys came onto campus and brought your heart rate belt. So we ran the same fitness thing again and compared that wearable to First Beat's wearable. And it started to allow us to have a conversation with our student athletes. So those kids were already bought into the science piece. Like, we know that you're using this to help protect us from doing too much and help us understand our bodies and that biofeedback thing. The UMBC kids didn't quite know us yet. So there was that bit of fear from them. But when they recognized that the QRT wasn't going to be held against them, but instead used as a tool to educate them on what they're doing off the field and better educate them on rest and sleep habits. And we're getting into closer to midterms or finals week or papers, big projects. You can see those trends on those kids' QRTs. So we're talking to them then about how efficient, how good you can you even be on the field, or how good are you in the classroom if you're not eating well, sleeping well, and hydrating. All those things are going to affect you in the classroom also. And they started to buy into it. It was actually great.
Oh, that's awesome. That's actually a great kind of a new challenge for you, because you had everything set at William and Mary, then to come in and have to actually reintroduce with a whole new set of people and explain the buy-in. That's great that you kind of had both opportunities now to do that.
I knew it was going to be a challenge. Even when we got here and we were explaining to the administrators kind of what we wanted to do it with this, and there wasn't anybody on campus yet that was monitoring training load or those sort of things. So I actually put together an entire sheet. I like to explain why I like to make big purchases. So this is what it's going to be. This is how it's going to affect our student athletes in their well-being and their wellness. It's not even just on the field. How are we getting fit and all those pieces? Like, this is how we can also use it as biofeedback for them. And it was sold. We've got two more programs in it now.
Nice. So you almost get that buy-in. Obviously, you've got to use the coach's eye, but then with that objective data, it just kind of gives you that extra bit.
Correct. Yep, absolutely.
I'll tell you what, I might need to bring you over to a few other campuses to talk to administrators, because you explained it a heck of a lot better than I do when I'm trying to convince them. So
I'll never forget when I was sitting down at a table with some of my administrators at William & Mary, and I had one of them say, you know, he has an athletic training background, and said, I would just rather use RPE. Like, you could just do an RPE questionnaire. And the thing is, so we've already said, soccer's been very researched. So the thing about RPE is, if the athletes actually don't know what a 10 is and what a 1 is, you know, they're just guessing. Some of our kids come in and we have this conversation with our athletic trainer sometimes. The kid's just sore, not injured, but they don't know the difference between being injured and sore. Some of the kids you're going to get have worked really hard and have won national championships, and some of them may not, you know? So you got to teach them what hard is, and you got to teach them what light is, so they're not always training in the averages. And that's helped. And when we had that conversation with him, and then we showed him what we were about to do, and, you know, there's research from other places and all that, it was easier to sell it to the administrators. But yeah, I mean, it's that student athlete wellness. It's not really a mandate, but the NCAA has been talking about it more, wellness and well-being, and how are we taking care of our student athletes. And I think one of the easiest ways to do it is load monitoring, but not just load monitoring, because they also have GPS. I'm sold on heart rate monitoring and what First Beat does, because it tells us what's going on with our student athlete. You can see it in real time, but you're talking about the internal measures, and those things are more important right now when you're talking about the overall well-being and wellness.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with the subjective data. I like RPE data as well, but there's always that danger that I'm the athlete, I'm competing for a starting spot, I'm competing for a scholarship. If I don't feel that great, I'm still going to give you a 9 or 10 because I want to play this week. I don't want you to pull me out of practice, and that, you know, maybe that's going to affect my playing time.
That is absolutely accurate. I mean, you're right. There are kids that are just going to go too much, and you're like, hang on, we got to pull you back just a little bit, because, you know, we want to make sure that you're not overtraining, you're not overdoing it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And kind of when we're talking about this whole player buy-in, is this newer generation, are they actually more like accustomed to this technology? Are they used to it, or is it still kind of a new thing?
It's still kind of a new thing. I think they're bought into the technology. Like, let's get instant feedback and wearables and all these other things. Some of the information that they get is a little bit over their heads. They're like, I'm not necessarily sure what I'm looking at. So we'll teach them what they're looking at and some of those player reports. But they're bought into it, especially when they know that the system is being used to just better them.
Excellent. And kind of when we talk about load management, do you have any examples of, like, when you've seen some data trends where you actually either had to cut back, or you said, actually, we can go a bit harder, we can add some more to practice?
Yeah, so especially if when we're in season, you know, you're coming off of like a 90-minute game, or let's just say that we had a game on a Thursday, and we did use quite a few subs, and maybe the temperatures were right and training effect scores weren't that high, then maybe the next training session it's going to be lighter. We're not going to go hard, but maybe we can still get in and play some small-sided games. Those kids that don't play very many minutes, they're going to definitely get in and play in some small-sided games. Say it was really hot like it is right now, and we just had to play 90 minutes on the turf, and and, you know, hot and humid. Our kids are going to need a little more time to recover and get some loads. So we'll pull back. We've done juggling ladders and all that stuff instead and get some light technical work in it. We had to do that once or twice in the spring because we were pushing the kids a little bit and we're getting ready to play a scrimmage game on a Saturday. So, you know what? We pushed them really hard at the beginning of the week, or maybe as we're coming closer towards the end of the week, we didn't push them hard enough at the beginning of the week. You know, maybe we can, as long as we're within that. I love the update on the dashboard, the acute to work rest ratio. Just it's just an opportunity to see where your kids are. And we love to follow the philosophy of Dr. Gabbett, you know, work hard, work smart. So we make changes based off of what's going on in the day. Even my head coach will log into the dashboard and she looked at the training sessions yesterday. You know, we had to cut practice short because it was a little too hard for them because it was too hot. So we had to cut practice short so that we're not overdoing it. We're not pushing the bodies too hard because we have a game on Saturday.
Well, that's nice to hear that you're both on the same page, that it's not, you know, a lot of programs I'm at, it's, you know, one coach trying to translate it to the other and the other just not getting there. So I'm happy to hear it's that smooth there. And as far as the trim numbers that we were talking about, the training load numbers, could you throw me like some numbers as far as like what a game looks like? What is it, you know, maybe a midfielder or a forward for a game?
I just pulled up averages for our spring games, and our center midfielders were putting in an average trim score of about 335. I mean, that's a lot. That's a high score for them. Our forwards are a little bit lighter, just 300. And then our center backs on average were around closer to 275. I think those numbers sometimes change though, right? So it depends on the style of play that you're playing in, and it depends on your opposition. So there were definitely games that I know back in the fall where our center backs were working harder than our forwards were because we were just under the gun, right? We're defending a lot, maybe looking for us to counter out. I think your center midfielders are always going to have a higher score because they're usually boxed to box. They're all over the place for you.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain number you try to shoot for during the week? If, you know, a lot of teams will say, okay, games are roughly going to be a 300. We've got two games every week. So there's 600 trim points. We've got 1,000 to work with. So that's what we can work with for the three practices.
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. That's exactly what we're looking for. So our head coach is big on periodization. Soccer's got a lot of education on periodization, you know, so working off of the fact that we're going to cost ourselves about 600 trim points on games. She's dividing it out. She's dividing our light training session days. You know, she's probably on average, our moderate training session is, or lighter to moderate training session is about 125. She usually works on that. And at the end of the day, you can think that, you know, if the day, we use colors. So if it's going to be a green day, which is a lighter day, yellow day is going to be a more moderate day, darker orange is going to be a little more heavy or moderate day. And then red is going to be our game days. It's going to be our overload days usually. You know, she's big on that. But, you know, you have the dashboard in front of you. You can say, you know, I was trying to go for 125 on the trim score and the elements were just right for us to be too hot. So we either got to back it up because we're watching it in real time, or we'll change what we're doing in the moment, or we're going to end practice a little bit earlier. Or, you know what? We thought that this was going to be a harder training session and now we're going to bump this up a little bit and to make it a little bit more intense, change our work to rest ratios a bit.
Okay, that's great to hear. And as far as how have you guys been on soft tissue injuries? I'm always interested with the different programs.
We inherited a team who did have some soft tissue injuries, so we were managing those pieces. In the fall last year, we did not have one soft tissue injury. Unfortunately, we had a group of kids who did not come in as fit as they should have. We take measurements on our kids and we track their own physical trends as far as fitness is concerned, and then we compare that to injury stuff. We did have one soft tissue injury this spring with a kid who was new to the program and just sort of jumped in. And as you already said before, kids want to do a 9 because they want to earn that spot, the starting spot, and they want to prove themselves, and should have pulled her back a little bit sooner. But, you know, we didn't have a soft tissue injury before that. So, and we're in a decent place right now as well. But even when I was working at William & Mary as well, when we started paying attention to our student athletes' trends and knowing when we can push and when we got to give them a break, we limited our soft tissue injuries. So this has definitely helped our kids be available and keep our kids fresh and healthy.
Okay, let's have a little fun with the question I just have to ask. On the bright side, it's been a huge summer for women's soccer with the U.S. Women's National Team's World Cup success. Where do you see the sport going from here?
The other countries are coming. I think, unfortunately for us, you know, we're in this equality pay thing and it's good. We need to get there, right? But I think it's even more of like an exposure thing. Other countries right now are developing and investing in their women's professional side. Both in Spain and in England, there are men's clubs that are going to get tax exemptions if they get a women's program in there and start developing those players. That's going to make an impact on us. So we're going to have to continue to work on, you know, our youth development side, which also includes includes the college game, but we're going to have to continue to develop in that. And I think hopefully our women's professional side is going to keep growing and we can grow that league as well. But in order for us to stay on top, we're going to have to continue to develop our youth players, and we're going to have to keep investing in our women and our women's programs. Because right now, I'll tell you what, our women's pro teams are well underfunded.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Jen, for taking time out. I know it's preseason and it's crazy time for you, so we appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That'll do it for this episode. If you like the episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533, or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.